Welcome back to When in Romance, where I am so excited to talk about romance again. Woo! I am Jess.
And I am Trisha.
And we are recording on Thursday, April 25th. Wow, it's the end of April 2024.
I can't. It's fine. It's great. It's cool. It's fine. Almost in summer. Oh my gosh. Jess, welcome back. We all missed you.
Thank you. I want to say I missed you all too, but
that's fair.
Most of the time I probably wasn't thinking about anyone at all.
I think that is legit. And we actually had a wonderful time chatting with Vanessa Diaz last episode. So many thanks again to Vanessa for joining. But we are, of course, grateful to have you. You will not be shocked to hear Diana Biller came up.
Of course.
Came up a little bit. Alexis Hall came up a bit.
Of course.
It was a super fun chat. And we, guess who also feels like third person present tense is weird? Vanessa.
Fine.
I am validated.
More it's for weird. Me.
Indeed. Indeed. Yes, I felt like the most actually, I feel validated by you constantly, so I can't even pretend like it was the most validated I've ever felt. But it was the most validated I've ever felt on this show by someone who wasn't you. So there's that. All right. So you weren't thinking of us, which fair enough. Mm-hmm. Were you, while you were traipsing around the country and around the world, were you reading anything that we might be interested in?
I was. I didn't read as much as I maybe could have, especially since part of my exploration was a few pretty long car rides, but I had to be the navigator. And I was sitting in the front seat, so I couldn't, like, you know, sneak read on my phone or my Kindle. But I got some good reading done. I only read half of The Ministry of Time, which is either recently out or going to come out soon. I should have known that since it was literary fiction, it was not really as romantic as I expected it to be. So when something gave me a little hint that it might not have an HEA, I read the end and was like, I'm going to read a romance novel now. So I switched. And I'm going to be talking about a couple of those books that I read later. But one book that I did read in my travels that, unfortunately, Trisha, you will not enjoy.
Okay. Let's talk about it anyway, because some people who aren't me might like it.
Is You Should Be So Lucky by Kat Sebastian, which is coming out next month, which is very soon. I think it's coming out relatively early in the month, so I'm not telling you about it with a dreadful wait for you all. But I hate to say this because it's a baseball book, but it knocked it out of the park.
Oh, yes. Oh, when in romance, come for the romance, Rex, stay for the puns.
It was so good. But I did get the chance to read, and it was a very nice, I tried to read kind of on theme, because I was in England and Scotland, so
I
read some stuff that was very English and very Scottish, and I will be talking about those later.
And is that one in the same universe as We Could Be So Good?
It is, and Nick and Andy do make minor appearances.
Part of the reason I'm asking, so like heads up to folks, as often happens when an author is about to have another book coming out, as I'm sure many of you know this by now, but We Could Be So Good was last I checked, was like super cheap. I bought it the other day, I think for like maybe $2 on an e-reader, three. But it was definitely discounted. So take a look, because it might still be discounted in the sort of anticipation. So they always do this so that you can get caught up before the next book comes out, and then you'll buy the next book, which I think fair enough. That's legit. Mm-hmm.
Very legit.
Well, that is lovely. I had been under the impression that you weren't reading based on what you put in our show notes, but good for you that you actually have been. Have you had other hobbies, other entertainment that has been distracting you, Jess?
Well, see, I've been back in the country for about a week, and I read You Should Be So Lucky while I was traveling in the country. But while at home, I've had this problem where the TV has been there,
Sure.
and I did things backwards where I didn't actually watch Outlander in the earliest part of its zeitgeist. But since I was in Scotland and I knew enough about Outlander because I read the first 4.5 books to like know where I was like, you know what? Maybe when I get home, I'll try watching Outlander again. And I have watched 2 seasons in
Sure.
the 3 days that I've been home.
We get it. That's legit.
And I am going to watch the rest as soon as possible.
That sounds amazing. I did watch early on. I watched the first season, and then as often, almost always happens to me, I kind of like forgot about it between the first and second seasons. And so when the second season came back, you know how like that happens where after you finish the first season of something, you're desperate for the next season to be like starting the next day. And when it takes like a year or 18 months or whatever, you're like, well, actually now I mean I could get, maybe I don't know. 45 minutes an episode feels so long. I have stuff to do. So I will have to, I also have been told that Outlander is the kind of series, because I've only also read the first book. I have been told that it's the kind of series where you can either stop after season one or book one, or you can stop after season slash book three, but you cannot stop after two. And that just feels like a lot to take on. I don't know if I can do it.
Yeah, the second season ends with a very big cliffhanger. Well, not like cliffhanger, but like turn in the story. And you're like, I was like, if I wasn't literally about to fall asleep, I would be watching season three.
Well, we will power through this podcast so that you can get back to it. I will tell you, I just picked up today, so I'm only a few chapters in, a book called Dating Dr. Dill by Nisha Sharma that came out a couple of years ago. And it was on a ton of like best of lists. It was on a lot of things. It had, so it's been on my radar for a while. It is an enemies to lovers book. It's a Shakespearean retelling, I think, of Taming of the Shrew, sort of like not retelling, but kind of a take on it. And I'm not always as longtime listeners know, enemies to lovers is at least I tell myself not my thing, and then I end up really loving a lot of books that have that trope in it. So it's about Karina, who the book opens on her 30th birthday. She has spent the last decade really establishing herself in her career. She's super happy. She loves what she does, but she is single and she's starting to wish that she wasn't. She's interested in being partnered, but she kind of doesn't know what to do. And then her family is very much about her younger sister's wedding, like to the point where they forget it's her 30th birthday. And her dad is moving out of her childhood home and wants to sell it. She wants to buy it, and he's kind of like, you don't have the money. And I'm not giving you down payment money until you get married or you get engaged. And I am like livid on her behalf. So far, it's a great book. It's a super easy read, and I really like it. I will be really interested to see how they kind of navigate this thing about someone being allowed to be independent and be an adult and be accomplished and like be living their life without a partner in a romance novel, right? Like, I think that's a tricky needle to thread. Like, my guess is that this is not going to result in a moral of the story being, in fact, you do actually have to be engaged in order to be a fully sort of fleshed out adult. But sort of based on the way that they've set up some of these relationships and some of these characters, I'll be interested to see how that works. But again, Dating Dr. Dill, a lot of you have probably read it because, like I said, it's been out and about for a while. So if you have thoughts, if you have feelings, let me know, because by the time you're listening to this, there's a good chance I will have finished it, and I will probably also have thoughts.
Yeah, it's hard to retell or reimagine or make a new take on the Taming of the Shrew because the source material is so ridiculous.
Yeah.
And,
well, and
you
also
know,
because it was done perfectly 25 years ago.
It was indeed.
I hate about you.
That was going to be my next point. It's like, yeah. 10 things notwithstanding.
Yes. Yeah. they've mastered it. So everyone else with your Taming of the Shrew retellings, just go home. We don't need you. Some people would probably say My Fair Lady, but no. No. It's Julia Stiles and Heath Ledger forever.
Forever.
All right. Why don't you talk a little about TBR and then we'll take a break and jump in.
All right. Are you looking to elevate your reading life? Tailored Book Recommendations is here to help with handpicked recommendations. Tell the bibliologist at Tailored Book Recommendations, or TBR, about what you love and what you don't. You can get recommendations via email or receive hardcovers or paperbacks in the mail. And with quarterly or annual plans available, TBR has something for every budget. Plans start at just $18. Visit mytbr.co to subscribe today. It only takes a few minutes. That's mytbr.co.
Awesome. All right, we'll take a quick break and then we will be back and we're going to talk, unsurprisingly, a little bit about pen names.
Today's episode is brought to you by Thirsty by Jazz Hammonds. College student Blake and her girlfriend have one goal: join the exclusive sorority that promises connections to a network of trailblazing women of color. Now, Ella's acceptance is a sure thing. She's a daughter of a Serena Society alum, after all. Blake, on the other hand, lacks Ella's pedigree and her confidence. Luckily, though really unluckily, she finds courage at the bottom of a liquor bottle. When she drinks, she's bold and funny, and as pledging intensifies, so does Blake's drinking. Ella assures her that she's fine, partying hard is what it takes, but with her future on the line, Blake must decide how far she's willing to go to achieve glittering dreams of success. Now, just so you know, Jazz Hammonds is the 2023 winner of the Critics Scott King John Steptoe Award for New Talent for We Deserve Monuments, and We Deserve Monuments was an Amazon Best Books of the Year and Barnes & Noble Best Books of the Year for 2023, so suffice to say, y'all should check this new one out. Thanks again to Thirsty by Jazz Hammonds for sponsoring this episode. Today's episode is brought to you by Flatiron Books, publisher of The Familiar by Leigh Bardugo. This is one I'm actually super excited about. I liked Leigh Bardugo's other adult fantasy books, and so I'm really looking forward to this one. It's set in the Spanish Golden Age during a time of high-stakes political intrigue and glittering wealth. It follows Luzia, a servant in the household of an impoverished Spanish nobleman who reveals a talent for little miracles. Her social climbing mistress demands Luzia use her gifts to win over Madrid's most powerful players, but what begins as simple amusement takes a dangerous turn. Luzia will need to use every bit of her wit and will to survive, even the help of Guillén Santángel, an immortal familiar whose own secrets could prove deadly for them both. So The Familiar by Leigh Bardugo is on sale now. And like I said, it's a must-read of the season. It's perfect for anyone who loves history, a little bit of magic, a lot of danger. You can get your copy now at LeighBardugoTheFamiliar.com. And thanks again to Flatiron Books, publisher of The Familiar by Leigh Bardugo, for sponsoring this episode.
All right, Jess. I think of myself as being like moderately online, maybe not like the most online, but like moderately. Then I'm sometimes reminded that I'm actually not as online as I think. But even I was sort of bombarded over the course of the last week or two. I think anyone who is a romance reader for sure, but anyone who's like a reader and is on book social media, book talk, bookstagram, book X, I don't know what that would be, kind of has to have been in some ways exposed to this Freydis Moon story. And I think it's really complicated, and I don't think we need to get into the weeds of it, but can you give folks like a general sense for, if they have seen this name crossing all of their social medias, what on earth is going on?
I can try. So especially if you are in sort of the indie speculative romance corner, you might have heard the name Freydis Moon. They have been putting out a few kind of like horror romance with Latina characters at their center, and identifying very clearly as a Latina author. And it has come to light due to some online sleuthing, very similar to what happened early on in this podcast with an author who doesn't need to be named, with that Freydis Moon was the author formerly known as Taylor Brooke, who a few years ago, if even that long, because it might feel like a few years ago, but maybe it wasn't, had done some cross-identity sort of, I don't know what you call catfishing as an author, like pretending to be several different people, and then just being sort of a bad actor as far as treating other authors, treating readers, treating people online, people in general, in not great ways. So the last week, maybe the week before, since I was on vacation, everything is kind of condensed into it came to light that it was very likely that Freydis Moon was the same person as Taylor Brooke, who also had multiple identities at that time. And also that Freydis Moon as a person, whether or not they were also this other person, was a general bad actor towards other people, sicking friends on people to harass them, etc., etc. So that in itself led to a broad conversation about pen names, and people are on opposite sides of the whole idea of pen names being good, pen names being bad. And so if you wander onto the book socials, you might see people talking about, like, there are people who are like, I use this pen name, these are my identities, I use this because my wallet name is not one that needs to be shared, and that is a valid choice for authors. Yeah. So nobody is saying pen names bad. Well, I mean, right, there are people who are saying pen names bad, and I think we have to argue that there are valid reasons to use pen names. And the fact that this one person, among a few others in book history or book social history, which is like 5 years old, have been bad actors while utilizing the idea of a pen name, of a taking on a marginalized identity with that pen name, is being something that is bad, but not all pen names bad.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing that, I mean, like I said, I don't think we need to get into the details of this, but the idea that the discourse has become about pen names is weird to me. Like, it's, that's not what this is. I almost think it's about identities, right? It's it's less about pen names and more about, like, I'll be honest, I don't use my real last name with most of my writing and most of the work that I do. Not because I'm not proud of it, but just because I don't want to necessarily have to explain to people. You know what I mean? Like, also, I kind of thought it'd be fun to take my grandmother's name, and so I did. But I'm not pretending to, like, you all know plenty about me. All of that is real. It is not, I am not pretending to be, I'm not pretending an identity that is not mine. And I think that's kind of more this question. And it gets so complicated to figure out what an expectation can or should be of an author who just generally wants to be more private, right? Right. Mm-hmm. Wants to be able to write books and be private. I mean, one example that jumps to my mind regularly is Alexis Hall. Mm-hmm. Alexis Hall is very private. I don't believe that he has, if he has done in-person events, it is not many of them. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that is the person's real name or not. I don't think it really matters. It's just kind of a, there's this complicated question of how much do we ask people to demonstrate their identity as kind of a credential of who they are as an author, mm-hmm. and who they are writing on behalf of. And I'm so torn, Jess. Like, we talk about this a lot. Like, it's, Book Riot in general, we make it very clear that one of the things that we want to be able to do is shine a light on authors who may not have the opportunity to have that light shown on them based on how mainstream media and how publishing works, right? Mm-hmm. We want to be able to highlight authors of color or queer authors or people who are trans or like all kinds of different folks. But also, you don't always know exactly who's who. And it feels very weird to say to somebody like, hey, I want to highlight your book because I think that maybe you are this, but I'm not sure. Can we, you know what I mean? Like, what kind of mm-hmm. responsibility do people have? And situations like this kind of seem like they ruin it for everybody in mm-hmm. some ways.
Yeah, because if you have someone who is creating an identity for themselves and taking up that space, then we are clearly missing the people whose identity is real, whose storytelling is authentic,
yeah,
and whose platform has been taken.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think bad actor is the way that you were describing this is a really good way to put it, because I think, like, when we can't just assume that people are acting in good faith, even if 99.9% of people are acting in good faith, mm-hmm. it just, like I said, it kind of wrecks it for other people, which is, if you are trying to figure out, you may be a person who has like been exposed to this particular issue and story and controversy and discussion and be thinking like, I've never even heard of this person. Why does it matter? Why is it all over my social media feed? I think that's what the bigger story, and certainly, like I said, Jess, I think you're more well-versed in it than I am, but I think that's what the story is that when someone does something like this, it has larger implications for people who actually are trying to write about their authentic experiences. Mm-hmm. So that's a bummer.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't really know what the solution is, but I don't know. Don't be a jerk, everybody.
I mean, that is, at the end of the day, that is what it is. Don't be a jerk.
Yeah. Don't be a jerk, everybody. If you have thoughts about any of this, please do reach out and let us know. Or if you feel like we missed a major part, like I said, our intention was never really to get into the weeds. It was to kind of talk more about why the story matters in a larger context. Mm-hmm. But if you feel like we missed an important detail, please do reach out.
Yes. But
speaking of not being a jerk, another big-ish story in the romance world that you actually pointed me toward, as usual, although once you get pointed towards it is a little bit of everywhere, that mm-hmm. folks may have seen, is about a book conference. We have talked about book conferences in the past. There are many, many wonderful book conferences. I think mm-hmm. you just were at one, right, Jess, or some kind of a book event?
Yes, I was just at Unbound Book Festival in Columbia, Missouri, which is one day and delightful. So
that's wonderful.
It was well run. People were nice. Like,
yeah.
Very contrast to the one that we're going to talk about.
Yeah. Mid-Continental Public Library also does a great one. Tucson Festival of Books, my understanding, is just absolutely top-notch. The creme de la creme. But there are many, many wonderful book conferences. And then there are stories like we heard recently about Readers Take Denver, which, as it was described in a blog post that I will Jess sent me that I will link to, a dystopian tale of poor management, controversy, non-existent communication, shady practices, disrespect, and disappointment, which that is, I mean, huge hats off for that just utterly fantastic description of this by Jessica Mack, who is the writer of this. So I will make sure that we link to it. It seems like this is a case of everything that could go wrong did go wrong. It's a book conference that I didn't get a sense that it's happened before, Jess. Like, maybe it was a first time thing. It's not like a PolyCon or something that is an annual event, but it is organized by Lisa Renee Jones, who is an author in the romance world. Did you get a sense that this is like a thing that is a regular occurring conference?
I thought it had happened at least once before, maybe I've just been hold. Maybe I've just heard of it longer. It happened once. Like, I think this might be the second time around.
Okay. So it may not be brand new. It seems like part of the job that I have in my day job is running conferences, and there are times where things just go wrong.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing you can do. It's not anybody's fault. The fire alarm went off at the hotel in the middle of like a 1500 person plenary session, right? Like, those sorts of things happen. This does not seem like that. No. This feels like it was, before we even get into any of the details of what went wrong, I think the tickets were like $300.
They were.
Which, that matters. Because if you are going to not consider accessibility needs, if you are not going to do a clear job of communicating how people should be lining up for author signings, if you are going to sign up and register way more people than your sort of keynote authors can sign for, if you're going to tell people that they have to stay hydrated and that you will have water stations around and then not do that, and instead people have to, like, you can't charge them $300, right? Like, you shouldn't do any of those things, even if you are hosting a free book conference. Yes. But if you are going to host a $300 conference, so, for example, Jessica, who wrote this post, was invited as a VIP influencer, but still bought a full cost ticket and supposedly was supposed to have early entry into rooms, which I guess did happen. But there was they didn't tell the authors that they were VIPs. So a lot of them did not actually go into the early access rooms. It just seems like it was kind of a mess. And I don't think it was intentionally a scam necessarily, but maybe it was. I don't know. This just feels, and I mean, you know, book conferences and book conventions better than just about anybody, probably, Jess. Like, this seemed weird to me.
Just, you know, reading down, like, I didn't get as deeply into reading about it as I know some people did. I've read this post. I've read a few authors' posts on it. I read a few things on Threads. Just to sort of get, like, various people's understanding of it. And it's very interesting because I have paid $300 for a ticket to something before, and it was StimulateCon. And that was their first one, and it didn't run seamlessly, but it was not that.
Yeah.
So I, like, it really, like, I don't think it was intentionally run badly, but it was intentionally run badly, right? Like, all the things you said. Selling twice as many tickets as they probably should have. not having enough time for author signings, not treating the authors in anything at, like, an equitable manner. Like, before you even get to the people who paid to go, well, no, because the authors paid to go too. Before you get to the readers, you have treating the authors in a certain way. You have dealing, like, telling people that you're going to sell their pre-orders if they don't pick them up, but not offering enough time to pick them up. Like, there are so many things that seem to have gone wrong. People are comparing it to Fyre Festival, but, like, I feel like the people who went to Fyre Festival knew they were going to be having some trouble.
Well, and also just, like, we've both been to book conferences. We've both been to romance book conferences. And one of the things that I have always told people when they ask, like, why do you go? Because I'm not a huge author signing person. Like, I'm not, there are many things about those conventions that are just not, like, things that I am super invested in. I'm super thrilled for the people that are excited about them. It's just not always my thing. Yeah. But the thing that I love about this kind of an event is the joy that comes from having so many people who love a thing gathered in that place to sort of be in community with a focus on that thing. And like, yeah, that's worth $300 in a lot of, like, situations. Maybe it's worth more. You know, I think RT used to be more than that. Like, it was, you're also paying for hotel. Oftentimes you're paying for airfare. Like, there's just a lot that has to go on there. And it's a bummer that so many people, I don't know, I guess it's a bummer that so many people invested that kind of time and that kind of energy and, frankly, like, that kind of joy in this event, and then were so disappointed. If you were going to give advice just to people who are considering, because I do feel like book conferences are more than starting to come back. They've begun for sure in earnest to come back. Like you mentioned, Steamy LitCon, even if it wasn't seamless, I heard great things, great reviews last year. It's slated again for August. I think a PolyCon might actually be this weekend. So
I think it is, yeah.
Yeah. So, like, they're out there. If you are a person who is interested in attending an event like this, do you have tips for, like, how do people make sure? There's no way to make sure. How do people best set themselves up for being in a situation where they're not totally getting screwed?
It's so hard because you don't know, right? Like, we didn't know the Steamulet con wasn't going to be this until we got there. And it was like, oh, you guys know what you're doing. Everything is happening great. So it's really like, look at the ones that are happening. Talk to people who have been to them, sort of do some online sleuthing. Like, I have no idea what Readers Take Denver was like in 2023, but apparently it wasn't what it was like in 2024. So, you know, sometimes it's like, things just happen. And I don't know what happened here with communication, with hierarchy of understanding. Like, I have no idea what happened here to make it fall so badly, but know that this is an exception, not the rule. A lot, like, there isn't a con in the world that is going to go completely smoothly, but expectations are going to try to be met. Timing, calling numbers if you're doing a number system, like little things like that. Like, at most times, if you go to a book event that isn't run by complete novices who have done no research and don't know anything about book events, like, because even a complete novice can put on a pretty good thing if they have done the research and know, kind of, like, understand how it works and what they should be doing. So, you know, first start out going to some of the ones that have been around for a while. Mid-Continental mm-hmm. is a good one. That one's been going on for a couple of years. A Polycon, if you can get a ticket. Yeah. I tried to get a ticket. They were gone in 3 minutes.
If that. I'm shocked they lasted that long. Those things are wild.
Yeah. Just, you know, if you're willing to travel, there are some great ones. Unfortunately, if you're in Denver and that's your local one, then I'm really sorry. Because you didn't deserve to have that experience.
Yeah. And I think, too, one of the things that I have poked around a little bit in this. I've read some different accounts and some different things. One thing that I have not seen, and if I am wrong about this, I really, really hope that someone will tell me, because I don't want to be wrong. And I'm fully acknowledging that it's possible that I missed something. But mm-hmm. I have not seen any sort of acknowledgement from Lisa Renee Jones that this didn't go as planned. Like, sort of, I'm comparing it to a Polycon a couple of years ago. We talked about it on the show because I actually happened to be hosting a conference at the same hotel as a Polycon mm-hmm. that overlapped by a day. And so I sort of saw in person some of the things that did not go right about that conference. And mm-hmm. to her credit, Jennifer Armentrout, after that conference, sort of came out and said, listen, I hear you. There were some things that did not go right. The heat was like, the air conditioning wasn't working as well as it should have. The water stations were not working as well as they should have. We've talked to the hotel. We've tried to address the concern. Like, she at least came out with an explanation. I think also an apology, but came out with an explanation. And that one was nowhere near the kind of disaster that it seems like this one was. But there were some issues. She came out later and said, I get it. I'm sorry. We're going to try to do better. Mm-hmm. I have not. Again, if I am missing it, please let us know, because I would really like to highlight it in our next episode. But I've not seen that same kind of even acknowledgement from Lisa Renee Jones. Is there something you've seen, Jess, that I haven't?
I have not either. I even went onto the website, and there the front and center is a statement from Lisa Renee Jones about the upcoming Readers Take Denver. So there is nothing post-
yeah.
event.
Yeah. And I think part of the reason that I even mentioned that is that if I were a person who had gone to a Polycon, and I almost sort of did in a tangential way when things had not gone well, if I had seen that sort of acknowledgement from the person doing it, I would think, like, okay, I get it.
Things go wrong.
Exactly. Would I get up at 5 o'clock in the morning and hit refresh over and over again to try to get tickets? Maybe not. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. I wouldn't tell people, don't go to this conference. It is the worst, because you can at least see someone sort of acknowledging the problem. I think that's the biggest kind of red flag for me with this one, is that not only were there many, many things that went wrong, some of them, like not considering accessibility, that's a problem, right? Like, that's the kind of thing that's not like, ugh, we're really sorry the air conditioning at the hotel broke. We weren't considering people's needs. Not being able to, if the main chunk of your event is having people get their books signed by authors, to not have a system to do that is kind of a red flag, you know? Like, it's just, I don't know. So, I think I'm with you that, as much as it's sort of difficult, probably the best way to ensure that you're going to have a good experience is to go to a conference that is either not the first of its kind or not the first that has been hosted by the entity that's hosting it, right? Mm-hmm. Like, if a library has hosted other book conferences, they probably know how to do it, and you're probably fine even if it's their first romance conference.
Yeah.
But, and, you know, maybe you've heard great things and you have a lot of faith in an author or a planner, like people did with Steamy LitCon. But yeah, I don't know. Feel free to let us know if you're considering one and you want us to poke around a little bit. We can do it. We can figure that out.
We can totally figure that out.
Yeah. We'll hit up the people that we know that might have some insight, and we'll be able to tell you whether or not you should spend $300 on a ticket, or at least offer you our best insights. Mm-hmm. Anything else you want to say about this or any other bookish events/dystopian tales?
I hope I am putting my faith and trust into the people around Lisa Renee Jones, at least, because I want the readers of Denver to be able to have a better experience in the future without having to travel elsewhere. But just remember, if there, like Trisha said, there are plenty of other places to go if you have the ability to do so. So don't make that your one BookCon experience and say, "Welp, I'm never doing that again."
Yeah. I mean, I will say this. The people of Denver have some really incredible bookstores. Tattered Cover is one of my favorites that I've ever visited from across the country. And that's not just because they do have a, they had a romance section when I was there. Like, they had a romance section before it was cool.
Yeah.
They had one in like 8 years ago or whenever I was last in Denver. Going again next month. Maybe I'll check it out, see if I can find it. All right. Let's take another break. And then we'll, you know, lighten things up and bring our own joy to the conversation. Do some book recs.
Today's episode is brought to you by Bloom Books. Diana Dixon has a busy summer and no time for tall, gorgeous hockey player Shane's shenanigans. Because you know what? If they shenan once, they'll shenan again. So she thinks she knows exactly who he is when he moves into her apartment building. But turns out Shane's sick of hookups and tired of being on the rebound after his long-term girlfriend called it quits. But when his ex comes back into the picture, he needs a plan. And who better to play his new girlfriend than his sassy new neighbor? So a fake relationship might be perfect for Diana's own ex issues, but Diana is used to living by the rules. Will she learn that when it comes to love, rules are meant to be broken? Make sure to check out The Dixon Rule by Elle Kennedy. Elle Kennedy is a New York Times and USA Today bestselling author with over a million copies of her books sold. So this is going to be another banger, y'all. Make sure to check it out. And thanks again to Bloom Books for sponsoring this episode. Today's episode is brought to you by Bloom Books. Charming, easygoing, and rich, Xavier Castillo has the world at his fingertips. He also has no interest in taking over his family's empire, but that hasn't stopped women from throwing themselves at him. Unless, of course, the woman in question is his publicist. The cool, the intelligent, the ambitious Sloane Kensington, who is a high-powered publicist who's used to dealing with difficult clients, but none infuriate or tempt her more than a certain billionaire heir with his stupid dimples and laid-back attitude. She may be forced to work with him, but she'll never fall for him because he's a client and that's all he'll ever be, right? Right, girl, like we all know. So just in case you didn't know, author Anna Wong is the best-selling author and book talk viral author of the Twisted Love series, the King of Sin series. Miss Wong got it going on, okay? Make sure to check out King of Sloth by Anna Wong. And thanks again to Bloom Books for sponsoring this episode.
All right, Jess, we were talking about what kinds of books that we wanted to recommend. We bounced around a few ideas, and one of the ones that you had suggested, and actually I realize now I don't know why, but was road trip romances, which we may have done some time ago, but it's been at least a few years. So we thought we were overdue to revisit the topic. Was it because you were road tripping around the better part of Great Britain?
It was like when, like I was saying, I was reading a literary fiction book that is well written and delightful. And if I had wanted that, I would have kept reading it. But I was in the car before, but when I could sit in the back seat and I didn't have to be the navigator, I could read. And I was like, I want to read something where they're just like wandering around England. And after I read that one, I found another one where they were just wandering around Scotland. And I had some other ones that were on my mind. And it was, I figured, like you said, we hadn't really talked about road trips in a while. And it's always interesting to see what qualifies as a road trip and how the travel influences the relationship.
I think that is, yeah, that's a really interesting, as I was kind of looking at my books and sort of putting a few books together, I was trying to think about like, what is it that makes a road trip romance unique? And I think one of the things is forced proximity, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
one of the other things about it is that I, of the three books that I'm going to talk about, two of them, and you could argue like two and a half of them, at least one of the people does not want to be going where they are going. So you have to sort of consider the circumstances of like, why are both people there? Like, who is the person that doesn't want to be there but feels compelled? Like, kind of what's going on there, which I think always adds a little bit of friction to a plot in a fun way. And it's sort of a built-in plot, right? Like, one of the books that I will just jump right in. One of the books that I was going to talk about is a novella called In Which Margot Halifax Earns Her Shocking Reputation. That is the full name of it. and I love it. That's part of the reason that I picked this book up, frankly. It's by Alexandra Vasti, and it is about Margot, who she and her twin sister, Matilda, have this reputation for being the Halifax Hellions. Their older brother is, I think, an earl. And they turn 18. They have basically all of the power to do whatever nonsense in society they want because their brother is highly ranked, classed, whatever we call it. And so they do. And so they kind of like, they're in a way that is not mean or not ill-natured, just in a way that they're like, we're going to be independent and do what we want. And like, one of them at their like coming out gala or whatever is like smoking a cigar. And it's, they're like, so, you know, they do that for several years. And then Margot goes to her brother's longtime best friend, Henry, who's also, I believe, his like attorney or accountant or one of those non-gentry sort of like positions. And she's panicked because her twin sister, Matilda, has decided to elope with someone who Margot feels is not a good fit to Scotland. And so she says to Henry, please, you have to go with me. You have to go with me. You have to go with me. And he at first says no, but he has actually been in love with Margot for many years. And so eventually he tells her that he will go because he doesn't want her to have to, you know, go by herself. And honestly, like, that's the plot. Like, that's it. It's not long. It's only maybe 120, 150 pages. So you don't need, like, a ton of plot. But, like, the fact that they are on this trip together trying to track down her sister, he's in love with her, she is facing increasing attraction to him, shenanigans ensue along the way. There's, like, also a broken carriage and, like, all kinds of things. But it's kind of a built-in plot in a way. I don't know if that's been your experience as well, but for sure that was the case with Margot Halifax and her shocking reputation.
Yeah, it's totally a built-in plot. And one of the first book that I read that in this batch of books is actually a very different kind of road trip because it's not that one that has sort of driven, like, the plot has driven us towards it, or like there's a destination end. It's actually a bike trip.
Oh, I almost did one of those too. Which is your bike trip one?
So this is I did something that I never do, and I read a book that's not coming out until June.
Ooh, June's right around the corner. That's fine.
Yeah, and it's called A Shore Thing. Shore, like the beach. By Joanna Lowell.
Come for the puns, guys. Come for the puns.
I love it. And this is a late Victorian seaside romance involving Kit, who is a trans man who has moved to this seaside town to sort of start over. And Muriel, who has come to this town in search of Kit at for his art. And so they literally run into each other, or more, she accidentally makes him fall off of his bike.
Happens.
And, they meet and they immediately have an essence of chemistry. But the road trip happens a few days later when Kit, who rides what they call a safety, which is what is familiar as a bike now, with the two wheels that are the same size, is challenged by a gentleman who is part of a cycling club. And they ride, I can't remember what they're called. What are the, I always forget what they're, not Penny Dreadfuls. Those are novels.
Those big bikes with like a big wheel in the front and a little wheel in the back?
Yes. Exactly those. The ones, and.
Okay, I'll find the name of them. You keep talking.
So, I can't remember the challenger's name. I call him Mr. Mutton, because the name of the bike club is like Mutton something. And so he challenges Kit to a race across Cornell. And
Penny Farthing. Sorry.
Penny Farthing. I knew there was
Which
a penny
always sounds
in there.
Like money. That's I right? thought that's what it was called. And I was like, that's money. That can't be it. Sorry, continue.
I appreciate it. But the whole thing is that Kit says that he can not only make it their route faster, but he can do it with a woman. And Muriel is the one who volunteers to be the woman, as long as he does the painting commission that she is seeking. Nice. And there's some other stuff that's happening that causes that to be an issue. But so they are literally on this multi-day bike trip around the south of England, on their bicycles. And like you said, they're stuck together. They're together for a long time. They spend a lot of time learning about each other, more than they would if they were just if they just happened upon each other at certain times of day in this seaside town where they start. So it's like, yeah, there is something to be said for like this built-in opportunity to spend a lot of time together. But also, since they're stopping at little towns along the way, and she's collecting seaweed because she is doing a lecture, that's the art that she's commissioning him for. And like, there's all these little things that happen in their little bubbles along the way. But it's a beautiful book, and the author's note is also beautiful. Aww. And it's not the first time I've read a historical romance with a trans man at its center, but it's definitely my favorite so far.
Ooh, interesting. Mm-hmm. Knives are out, because I have some, I'm not going to mention any names, but I have some thoughts that now I'm like, oh, really? It's this one? Okay. All right. Whatever. We'll set that aside for next time. Right. I will talk very quickly about a book called Signal Boost, which is by an author we've talked many times about, Alyssa Cole. But because this is one of her first series, I don't think people know necessarily as much, you know, like A Princess in Theory, I think, was one of the bigger books that kind of helped Alyssa break out a little bit. And this was pre that. Gosh, this series might be almost 10 years old now.
It's pretty old. It's like 2016, I think.
Yeah. I think Signal Boost is 2015.
Oh.
So, yeah, which is wild. Yeah. And this is the second book in the series. I think you're okay. I will confess, it's been a minute since I've read this. I've read it a couple of times, but I haven't read it most recently for probably at least a few years. I think you're probably okay to jump in with Signal Boost, although, honestly, why would you? You can just start with Radio Silence, and they've redone the covers, and they're beautiful. But basically, this is a post-apocalyptic series. The first is about the family sort of all being stuck together in a cabin and trying to figure out what to do and how to do it. The second is about a brother of one of the main characters from the first book and best friend of the other, John. And they have been in this cabin. And I think I must not have read this book again since COVID, because I think I would understand a lot better some of the "we're all stuck in this house together waiting this thing out" energy that opens this book. But so John and his family have been, they've survived. They've been like trying to get through, trying to figure something out. And as circumstances sort of unfold, he meets Mikhail, who is trying to make his way to a college campus because Mikhail thinks he can sort of help figure out what has gone wrong and potentially how to fix it. So they end up on this road trip together. But I think one of the things that's really fascinating about this book and this whole series, frankly, is what you don't know. Like the reality in so many apocalyptic, post-apocalyptic, dystopian kinds of books, you know what has happened and why and how and what the goal is to try to fix it. Mm-hmm. And in this one, there is such a void of information. They don't know what happened. They don't know why it happened. They don't know how it happened. They don't know how to fix it. They don't know if it's ever going to end. And so I think even though there is like a very clear plot as John and Mikhail are working, they have to, in this world with no cell phones and no directions and no navigation systems and maybe no maps because we've gotten over it, you know, are trying to make their way just on foot to this university, which is the bulk of the book. But they don't know much of what has happened or why. And some of the story is them trying to piece it together. And I think there's something that's like very, it's even more unsettling to have that aspect of the story versus more. And I don't know, I think it was sort of prescient of Alyssa Cole to be able to write this kind of thing even before we have all been through kind of what the last several years have looked like. So I said I was going to be brief and I wasn't, but doesn't matter. Read Signal Boost by Alyssa Cole.
Another one that I read in Great Britain because I felt like I needed to read on theme was Never Cross a Highlander by Lisa Raine, which I did start reading in Inverness.
Nice.
And this one, it's, I'm going to offer a couple of warnings ahead of time, like much like Outlander, which I made a few like connections when I got back and started watching Outlander. Like she doesn't pull punches. There are multiple scenes of attempted sexual assault. There is brutality and violence, and there are definitely some arguments that Callum, the male lead, is not one for not taking fatal action. So with that, I really enjoyed Never Cross Highlander. So this is an interesting book because Lisa Raine is a Black author who was like, I want a reason for Black people to be in Scotland, and I will make an argument that this story could have happened. She takes two people who are of African descent, both of whom have been brought to Scotland by way of family being stolen. Neither of them are from families that made it to the Americas and were brought back to Scotland, like you might see in, say, the Courtney Milan story from the Hamilton anthology.
Oh, yeah. Yes, I know what you're talking about, and I don't know the name of it. Yep.
Yeah, but they are like third generation Scots by way of one of them, their grandparents were stolen from enslavers by pirates and they ended up in Scotland. So all this to say, there is a really interesting history behind these two Black people finding each other in Scotland. Ailsa, it has been wrongfully enslaved. She was born a free Highlander, and she was taken on a trip to as part of her clan, and was wrongfully enslaved, taken away from her clan, and has been trying to get back to her family for 3 years. And she encounters Callum, who is part of a different clan, when he and his clan members come for this big tournament at the castle where Ailsa is working. And she, at the end of this tournament, is going to sneak away and rejoin her clan because she's seen that they are there at the tournament. And Callum has actually come in part to free the other enslaved people who are at this castle and accidentally kidnaps her.
Sure.
So the road trip in this book starts out as Ailsa, Callum, and the other enslaved people who have been freed from the English king traveling away from Stirling Castle, like as far as they can possibly go. But then she makes an agreement with him to help her get back to the Highlands. So there, it's not the bulk of the book. It kind of reminded me of Butterfly Swords in that way, where it's like,
oh, yeah,
they kind of run into each other. And then it's like, if you help me get to this place, then, and then there's other intrigue that happens at the other end of the road. But it's, they're, like, their travels together has a big impact on their relationship because they sort of come to understand each other as very similar but very different people. So, yeah, Never Cross a Highlander by Lisa Vrain. Brutal, violent, still worth reading, I think. Like, the relationship is compelling. The story, there is a bit of mystery. There is definitely, like, rightful vengeance. Or sure. Righteous vengeance, as it were.
Nice.
So, yeah. I thought it was definitely interesting to read as the Highlands were passing me by. But it's definitely one of those that is very much one of its kind. And it's definitely worth picking up.
And we waited a long time for that one.
Yeah. Yeah, we did.
But it came. Eventually it came.
It finally came
all the same. All right. We are running a little bit long. We got so excited because you were back, Jess. We tried to cram so much in.
I know. I'm sorry.
No. We're so happy to have you. We should have just planned for like a 3-hour episode. But we didn't. And our wonderful audio editor, Caitlin, probably would have walked off the job. I'm okay to hold my next book for another conversation. Do you want to shout yours out or you want to hold it also?
I can hold mine for another conversation. It's definitely one that I will find a reason to talk about. So,
Ooh, suspense. That's going to keep people coming back for more. So we will hold for our next episodes. Please do, as always, let us know what you're thinking, what you're reading about. If you have thoughts on pen names, identities, and people's privacy and how to work all of that out, please let us know. If you know anything more about the Denver book convention that did not go great, including anything we got wrong about either story, please reach out. We do our best to make sure that we've got everything, but things pass us by sometimes pretty quickly, and there are things we can miss. So we always want to hear it if we did. Huge thanks, as always, to our wonderful audio editor, Caitlin Brame. You can always find us on When in Romance at bookriot.com, and thankfully Jess is back, so I don't know if you've worked your way through the backlog of email or not, but...
I'm trying.
Yeah. So, huge thanks to Jess for handling our email. You can find us on social media as well. I'm at Trisha Haley Brown on Instagram and Blue Sky.
I am Jess_is_reading on Instagram and now Threads. I finally joined Threads, like many of you who might have joined Threads last weekend, in order to follow the drama.
Yeah.
And I am still on Twixter at Jess's Reading, all one word. And as long as we have it, TikTok at Jess_isreading.
You got at least a year. I am confident of that. We'll talk about that another time. All right. Please do rate and review the podcast. It helps folks find us. Reach out. Let us know what you're thinking, what you're reading about. I think that's it, Jess.
Yes. I had something else to say and I lost it. But happy reading, everybody.
We'll save it for the next episode.